"Why do we even need guns?" was the first question I asked as my supervisor went over the protocols. "The room is empty, right?" "It's just in case anyone tries to enter or leave the room," he responded coldly. "Leave? Don't worry about it. Just do as you're told, and everything will be fine." I'd been hired alongside Mark to guard an empty room in a small town storage facility. To the best of my knowledge, it had just appeared one day out of nowhere. Since then, only three people had gone inside, all of which died within a minute. During their short visit into the room, a camera had been set up, delivering a constant, live feed through which we could observe the room. Though nothing had ever been seen within, an eerie aura surrounded the place. The walls were made from an unidentified metal, and the door didn't have any obvious way of opening. It either opened when touched or remained closed. Either way, our orders were simple: keep people away from it. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 12 months of the year, the room was guarded by one of three teams. While the job was exceptionally boring, it paid enough to keep us from asking too many questions. We were only to contact the team leader, Dr. Henderson, if any activity was recorded within the room, be it actual movement or just sounds heard through the door. Other than that, we were left to our own devices, which meant we could mostly slack around and talk. Every now and then, we'd hear faint sounds coming from behind the door. To me, it sounded like a distorted music box playing an old tune. It was one I remembered my mother listening to as I grew up. Beyond that, I could hear someone sob quietly, the familiar yet distant sound of an old woman crying. Mark, on the other hand, swore up and down it was a young boy laughing. Though he couldn't name the boy, he too said it felt eerily familiar. Still, the camera showed nothing. We just contacted the team leader as commanded, who always seemed utterly uninterested during his visits. "Sounds again?" he asked. "Yeah, it's, Mark tried to explain before getting cut off. "It's not important what you hear, as long as the screen remains empty. Just keep your eyes peeled and let me know if anything changes." Years went on like that, and we stood posted in front of that empty room. The metal door that separated us from unknown horrors remained untouched, and as far as we were concerned, nothing would ever change that. We followed orders, got paid, and that was it. At least until we heard someone knock from the other side of the door.
"Hello? Please let me out. I don't want to be alone anymore,"
the voice of an elderly woman said. It sounded like the same woman I'd heard sobbing over the years. That tune of that damn music box kept playing in the background. Those two facts really reminded me of my mother, which was an impossible thought, as my mother had died years earlier. "Do you hear that?" I asked Mark, who seemed transfixed by the sound himself.
"Yeah,"
he responded with barely a whisper. "I'm calling the doc. He better hear this," I said as I redirected my attention towards the empty screen. I picked up the emergency phone and just pressed 1. It prompted an alarm that immediately alerted the team leader. We'd already been through the procedure enough times to make it an unimportant event. Still, something was different. Despite the sounds we'd heard over the years, no one had ever knocked on the door.
"Oh God, it can't be,"
I heard Mark say in the background. I turned around to find him as pale as a sheet. His face was drenched in sweat, and his eyes were fixated on the screen. I took a few steps closer, just to make sure my eyes weren't deceiving us both. There was something inside the room. At first, I couldn't tell exactly what it was. It looked sort of like a deformed chair, as if someone who'd never seen a piece of furniture before had been instructed to put a chair together. On top of it lay a music box. Before we could discuss the thing that had appeared inside the room, Dr. Henderson entered the storage facility wearing a tired expression on his face. "Report," was all he said as he greeted us. "There's something inside the room. It's a—" I tried to explain before another bout of knocking shut me up. The sound seemed to wake the doctor up a bit. Though he still didn't look too concerned, he at least decided to stick around. It wasn't until he got a glimpse of the live feed before he froze dead in his tracks. "No, no, no, no," he mumbled. With that, the image on the screen got replaced by static. Whatever was in the room had interfered with the feed.
"Just let me out. It's so cold in here,"
the voice said through the door. I could see the doctor getting more nervous by the second. The blood had drained from his face, and pearls of sweat had formed on his forehead. He picked up his own phone, ready to call for reinforcements. But, just like the live feed, the phone refused to work. "Hey, Doc, what's going on?" I asked. Mark hadn't spoken a word. He just stood there, hypnotized by the static-filled screen in front of him.
You two stay here. I'm going to get a cleanup crew," our doctor stuttered. "Don't open the door. Just stay here and make sure nothing gets in or out."
He rushed out of the building as he continuously tried to call for help with the broken phone. Once gone, Mark and I gave each other a quick glance before another knock redirected our attention to the door. "Do you see him?" Mark asked after a moment of silence. "Him? What are you talking about?" He nodded. "It was Alexander. It was my son." "Your son that went missing 7 years ago?" I asked, confused. "I need him to get out of there," Mark said in a panic. With that, he rushed to the door and tried to figure out how to open it. "Mark, wait!" I shouted. He ignored me, and when he couldn't find any feasible way of opening the door, he prepared to kick it in. "Stop it!" I ordered as I pointed my rifle in his direction. "Please, he's trapped in there," Mark pleaded. "It doesn't make any sense, Mark. Your son is dead. How could he possibly be inside that room?" "I can't lose him again. I just can't." His words were oddly rid of emotion, as if his words weren't his own. "Mark, you're not yourself. Please, just calm down and let me deal with this." Surprisingly enough, he complied with my demand. Still, I needed to get him safely away from the door. While I didn't have anything to tie him down with, there was a closet around the corner I could lock him inside. "Just take a few steps back and come with me," I said carefully. He nodded without arguing, and I started to relax. I lowered my rifle ever so slightly and gestured for him to move away from the door. He turned around, and before I could react, he picked up a chair and threw it at my face. One of the legs hit me in my eye, and I immediately fell to the ground. As I lay there in agony, Mark took the opportunity and jumped on top of me. Then, he swiftly hit me over the head with his own rifle. While I was in a haze, Mark tied me to the same chair he'd thrown at me. I didn't even know where he'd gotten a rope from, but I was absolutely stuck. "Mark, don't do this. The doctor will be here with help any second." By then, the knocking had turned to hammering, and the pleading voice was screaming to be let out. Mark had tears streaming from his eyes. I knew we weren't hearing the same sounds, but I needed to get through to him. "Please," I begged. "Whatever is in there, it's not your son." "Shut up. I need to do this." He was clearly crying, yet his words carried no emotion. Again, he tried to open the door. That time, he merely had to touch it before it just swung open. On the other side, it only revealed a pitch-black void of darkness. For a moment, Mark just stared at the emptiness. The music box had stopped playing, and the woman begging to be let out had been silenced. "I'm so sorry," he said, before something violently pulled him into the room. As he vanished, the void seemed to pour out into the rest of the storage facility. All light that had previously occupied my surroundings were eaten up by the ever-expanding darkness. Once it had passed me, I felt the temperature drop to zero, muffling each and every sound in the area. "Mark!" I called out, still stuck to my chair. There I sat in absolute silence, praying that the doctor would return with reinforcements. I could hardly see 2 feet in front of me, but there was definitely something moving around in the room. Just vague shapes emerging through the door, producing wet footsteps as they walked in my direction. I didn't dare to make a sound. Mark had vanished, and in his place, the air had filled with a sickly, metallic stench. I tried to quietly wriggle myself out from my seat, but Mark had tied me up too well. All I could do was to hold my breath as dozens of silhouettes walked past me, leaving the room. A few minutes passed, and the footsteps settled down. It felt as if the creatures had left the room, but the darkness lingered. Still, I didn't move an inch before I saw the facility fill with flashlights. The doctor came running in with a dozen guards, all brandishing bizarre heavy weapons. They quickly cleared the room, placing themselves in front of the open door that led into the void that had swallowed Mark. "Oh God," a couple of them mumbled. Dr. Henderson was the one to untie me. My wrists were raw from the struggle, but I was left otherwise unharmed. "What the actual fuck happened here?" he demanded to know. "It was Mark. He went in the room." With that, my boss rushed to peek inside. I followed shortly behind him. The weapons the guards held weren't typical ballistic rifles. Instead, they shot out powerful, blue beams that penetrated the void, causing the darkness to retreat to the corners. Finally, we could get a glimpse of what had actually happened inside. There lay 100 pieces of broken flesh strewn not only across the floor, but the walls and ceiling. The remains defied gravity and covered every available surface with bloody chunks of meat and clothing fragments. The clothes made it easy enough to identify the mangled corpse. It was Mark. Then, I noticed something that immediately caused me to puke onto the floor. I saw a chunk of flesh containing an eye. Though it was absolutely impossible, the eye darted around the room in panic. It blinked and even responded to light. It was alive! Another chunk contained part of his mouth. It moved around in strange directions, as if trying to scream, but unable to. Then we saw a piece of his heart, still contracting pointlessly, and muscle fibers hopelessly trying to move limbs that weren't there anymore.
"Seal the room, now,"
the doctor ordered. "But he's alive," I said, still not believing it.
"He made a choice to go inside. Do you want to suffer the same fate?"
The guards closed the door without speaking a word and started putting plates of metal over it. A part of me wondered why they hadn't done that from the get-go, but I couldn't bring myself to ask any questions.
"Did anything leave the room?"
my boss asked. I just nodded.
"Did they touch you?"
No. The crew set up a perimeter with guards and cameras facing the door, but I feared the damage had already been done. Whatever existed inside that room was far beyond the rules of our own reality, and now they were free.
"What are we going to do now?"
I finally got the guts to ask.
"We're going to have to kill everyone in this town."
Richard Saxon wrote this story and many others for this podcast. He recently came out with his first book. It is only $2.99 on Amazon, and it is free if you have Kindle Unlimited. Search Tales from the Depths on Amazon or click the link in the description below. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're listening on Spotify, don't forget to hit that follow button to get notified every time a new episode is released. Also, please take a second to leave a rating for the podcast. This is so important to help the podcast grow. Thank you.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. I want to give you all a quick heads up regarding some upcoming political ads you may start hearing leading up to this year's presidential election. These ads do not represent my own political viewpoint. So if you hear a political ad play on the podcast and it's not in my own voice, then it has absolutely nothing to do with me personally as a podcaster. Thank you again for being a dedicated listener of mine, and I can't wait to have another amazing year with you guys. I'll see you in the next episode.